Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, Ken lasted one day in this seat. Ken wanted to be back today. He would have been back today. Something popped up that he had to take care of at home, but I'm sure he'll be on tomorrow with me. Wiggy, good morning.
Good morning.
Courtney.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you? It's Friday. How can you not be great? You
know? Hello.
Hello. Scheimer, how are you today?
Howdy. I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm with the howdy, man, huh?
What's with the y'all?
Well, he does y'all, too. Yeah,
y'all every now and then, but howdy.
Yeah.
Y'all's just an easy catch-all, so that's why I use it quite a bit.
Well, howdy to you, too.
Thank you.
I am in for Greg, who is finally in Key West. Courtney was giving me the update. So what happened yesterday for the audience that's been worried about the whereabouts of the namesake of this show?
Let me tell you, it was a long one for Greg Hill yesterday. So he texted me around 7 p.m. and said, still not there, had to take Uber from Lauderdale to Key West. So they ended up taking off from Boston to get to Key West. Whether it was a new plane, engine, whatever. I don't know what ended up happening there, but they got in the air.
Can I put a quick pin in that?
Yes.
So every plane you're on was just landed from somewhere else.
Right.
And so you're pulling back, and an hour ago, that plane that you're pulling back on landed in Boston.
Right.
And then something pops on, and you can't use the plane anymore.
Right.
Right.
Even though it's been used 100 times.
Right.
And but so I'd rather them be safe than sorry.
Exactly. I don't know. I feel like, you know, you could always crash into the Hudson. But
that's true.
Go ahead. Sorry.
But I guess the runway in Key West was wet.
Time did they take off?
I do not know what time they took off, but it seems like they landed in the evening because he finally got an Uber around 7. Drop-off was 10:13 p.m. He sent me the Uber screenshot. And the rehearsal dinner was last night. So that's where my mind goes immediately for Dooley and Corey. You know, are you going to make... clearly, you're not making the rehearsal dinner. He said, no one is. I think they did it anyway, but three-fourth of the wedding party was on this flight, including Corey, the bride's mom. Mm. So that makes me so sad that she missed it. But then the craziest part... And this isn't going to make sense for, I would say, half of our audience. But he sends me a photo at 12:58 a.m. And says, I don't know who this is, but Lindsay told me to send it to you.
All right.
I've sent the photo to Mitch.
Okay.
It is Tom Sandoval, who if you are a Bravo person, you know who Tom Sandoval is. Scandoval was like the biggest thing of reality TV ever.
He was also a big deal on The Traitors on NBC.
Yes, he was on Traitors, so some people know him from that.
All right.
But he was performing at the bar that Greg ended up at in Key West. And like the fact that Greg just walks into these bars and there ends up being like this pop culture moment happening is just, it's so shocking to me every single time.
Right. But he's like Forrest Gump.
Right. Like he just finds himself in these situations without looking for them. And so it seems like he did arrive in Key West sometime in the late evening. And
how much was that Uber drive from Fort Lauderdale to Key West? Because you guys told me it was a 3-hour car ride.
At least three
hours.
Yeah,
and Fort Lauderdale's about 40 minutes north of Miami. So you're looking at, I have no idea.
Jesus.
I just sent it to Mitch. I had the flight number from yesterday. Because one of the eagle eyes in the Twitch said that there's no flights from Boston to Key West, and I found that there was actually a flight. So it was intended to depart at 8:10 and get into Key West at noon on Thursday.
All right.
The flight departed Boston at 12:24, 4 hours and 15 minutes late, and was diverted to Fort Lauderdale, landing at 4:26. But that means they flew to Key West. We're preparing to land, and then all of a sudden had to go back north to Fort Lauderdale. And then you get in at 4:24 into Fort Lauderdale. I don't even know. That is hellish.
That is a crazy day.
And I would have just left the next day. I wouldn't I wouldn't even done that.
I don't know. At that point, like, he's with all of like the rest of the wedding party. I'm sure they ended up having fun at the airport. Like, I don't know.
That is a long ass day.
But what's crazy to me, so they landed at 4:26, but he sent me the text of the Uber at 7. So what did they do from 4:26? I guess trying to figure out, like, if there was a flight to get to Lauderdale to Key West or what they were going to do. Ended up with an Uber.
Yeah. Shyam asked in the office before the show, why not rent a car? Which to me would have been...
I don't get it.
You rent a car and then you can just return it to Key West.
Yeah.
There's an extra fee.
That feels way cheaper.
I'm sure Key West is in need of cars. It's probably got, you know...
A three-hour Uber's got to be, what, a couple $100?
Easily. The Uber to the All-Star game. How much was that?
I didn't have to pay for it because I was working. But that was like a four or five hour Uber from JFK to Cleveland.
Yeah, that is I'm glad he's there. I'm glad he made it finally. Key West is a beautiful place, but not the easiest place to reach. So, Greg, we'll be back on Monday. We're on Monday, right? Even though it's a holiday?
I believe
correct,
so.
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Greg will be back Monday. We'll join us at Gillette Stadium. And we have a very exciting show. Pop Douglas coming up at 7. We have the great Kostos joining us at 9:30. We have the news with Courtney. We have back-to-back Bruins wins to open the season. Sean, what was your big takeaway last night from the Bees?
I am impressed. Like, they've scored more goals in these two games than I expected them to. Korpisalo made a couple really big saves last night. Overall, they're starting way better than I expected them to. Like, that's kind of where I'm at. I don't know that this will necessarily last, but the fact that you got a win in a game where David Pastrnak only had a point, didn't have a goal, only had one assist, I think is a big deal. I think that matters.
Yeah, it's still early. See, you know, they're a team that's grinding it out, so we'll see what they look like. And if you were to take an Uber from here to New York, it would cost you $600. So
yeah,
holy smokes.
Yes, and that's right now, and right now it's not considered a high peak time.
And how long would that take? Like 3 hours?
That's three and a half. At rush hour.
Yeah.
It says. It looks like it says you'd get there at 10:21.
Yeah, wow. So that's almost four and a half hours.
You know, so I'm just kind of, if you're in Fort Lauderdale and you're trying to get an Uber to go to, I've never been to Key West, but I'm imagining it's probably busy. So
at 4:30 p.m.
Yeah, so probably 500-600 beans for them.
At least.
Yeah, I would have rented
a
car.
Rent a car. It costs $100.
Right, and then you can stop, grab a bite. You know.
Take your time.
Because you know what they're probably trying to do, which doesn't add up, because you can rent a car and just drop it off in Key West.
Right, you just pay a fee. Yeah. You return it to the other destination.
So it's $150 total instead of $600.
And then you just fly out of Key West if you're not going to fly back out of Fort Lauderdale.
Right. Greg thinks going to kayak means getting in the small boat, not actually trying to find a rental car.
Wow.
We'll take your worst travel story, 617-779-7937. Paul has a story about Key West. Good morning, Paul. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday, guys. Loving the show as usual. Been listening to Greg for over 30 years. I'm a truck driver. So,
awesome.
I went to go see my wife. She was a surprise. She was in Key West with her best friend. I went to go propose to her down there. And she didn't know I was coming, but the closest I could get was Fort Lauderdale. It took me almost 2 hours to get through Miami to get down to Fort Lauderdale. And
terrible.
Then on the way back, they called us up and said, your flight from Fort Lauderdale is leaving early, but I was in Key Largo, so I was still 2.5 hours away, so I missed my flight coming back from Key West.
Jeez.
And what a place Key West is. Once you hit the 7 Mile Bridge, you can make some time, but when you're down there, it's quite a place. It's where I proposed to my wife. So
did she say yes?
Great. Oh yes, she did.
Oh,
20 years on March 17th. We've been
together. Congratulations!
So, congratulations, Paul. Thank you for calling in on Friday. Drive safely. We have I was thinking driving in this morning that this feels like the first Patriots Friday in a really long time where you're not being. We're not speculating as to whether or not you're going to have a football season.
I felt the opposite coming into this show today.
Really?
I feel like this game on Sunday is more important than last week's game. Like, this to me is set up to be, I'm praying that Mike Vrabel, you got to trust Mike Vrabel that he's got the guys ready to go and all in line and all have their head in the game. But this is set up to be such a letdown. And all the air gets taken out of the balloon if they lose on Sunday. All of it.
If you lose this game on Sunday, I think a lot of questions, you know, I think, you know, Courtney, you might be right. Well, you know, you kind of got lucky against Buffalo and had one of those great games and you were much higher. But I think then the focus will shift to Mike Vrabel and him as a coach and how is he not able to get his players focused to be able to go down to New Orleans and win a game that they should win. Because it's not like you beat Buffalo at home. You went to right. Buffalo. So playing on the road and beating a team on the road, you just proved that you could do it against a really good football team. And if you don't do it against New Orleans, it's going to have Vrabel like, did you not have these guys focus? What the hell happened?
And I want to be clear because I feel like I've been so negative. I'm so impressed by this team. And I think that they're for real. Like, I think that this team, Drake May, Mike Vrabel, mm-hmm. Steph Diggs, like, I think everything's just clicking right now. I just worry like that. I'm worried going into this week.
You really are, huh?
Yeah, yeah. Wow. And I've been worried since Monday. I don't know what it is.
Do you think it's that maternal instinct that is kicking in?
Maybe. Jeez, I hope
but
not.
But do you have confidence in Vrabel as a coach?
I have confidence in Vrabel.
So
I
what worries
when
you?
When I asked the question on Monday, it was such like a non-answer. He's like, yeah, I think we'll be fine. That worries me. Like, I just, if you hear Steph Diggs talk about it right now, he's saying like, yeah, this is really important. This is more important than it was last week. A ton of guys have come out just saying like, this is a very important game for us to go into New Orleans and to get a win.
So if they're saying that, then it seems like Vrabel has them thinking and focused the right way.
That's what I hope.
Because if a lot of the guys are like,
it's a worry that I have, and I think that people that aren't worried about it and just immediately jumping to Drake May MVP or Super Bowl or AFC champs, like, might have to come down.
I'm not worried about this game one bit,
all right?
One bit at all.
Good.
My expectations are if these guys are saying it, Vrabel's got them locked in and focused. They're a better football team than the Saints. Right now, you know, the Saints could win the game if they go down there and they have four or five turnovers. But let's say it's, you know, an evenly matched game where, you know, it's one turnover apiece or zero turnovers, whatever the number you want to put on it.
Yeah.
I think if everything's even, you win this game by at least 10 points.
Yeah, and I think, Courtney, you hit on a couple things. One, the Patriots are not at all at a point where they can enter any game in the NFL and feel like if they show up, they can win. Mm. That was, you know, years and years ago. And it goes to two questions that I had. One, are they back? Are you back in thinking this is a playoff team, that this is what they've been, this is what they've been building towards? Drake May, Mike Vrabel, Josh McDaniels, the defensive additions, they're here. They're going to win nine or more games. And if not, why? And the other was, I was trying to, I heard places all around the city talking about how the Bills game was the biggest Patriots win since Super Bowl 53, since, you know, there was a big, I think 2019, the Patriots played the Bills in December.
Was that the three-pass game?
No, that was still with Brady in 2019.
Were you talking about the win game? Jones win game.
Oh, there's the win game. So you can pick whichever. We have it on Twitter. We have it elsewhere. So if you have any thoughts about where the Patriots are heading this weekend, and where are you in terms of biggest wins since? Because to me, that Sunday night win was the biggest Patriots win since Super Bowl 53.
Wow.
Because you don't have any other, there was not a game like Brady. I mean, Mac played Brady close. Folk dinked the uprights. They don't win that game. You had the overtime game against the Cowboys where you had the great pass to Kendrick Bourne, the comeback there, but that led to nothing. To me, in terms of magnitude, upset, reshaping the way in which people view this team, the Bills win was the biggest win in five seasons.
Yeah, you haven't had a game with that kind of significance that you've actually been able to pull out a win in a long time.
Right. Right. It felt like we were heading towards another moral victory Monday.
100%. And I fully expected that, like, going into the game. It's why I picked the Bills in the first place. Because I'm like, yeah, I expect the Patriots to play close. I said it on Football Sunday. I'm like, yeah, I would pick the Patriots to cover 8.5. But I don't necessarily think they win. I think we come in Monday happy with the way they played and competed. But ultimately, mm-hmm. you're going up against the best quarterback on the planet. Mm-hmm. And they proved me wrong. Like, they came out and actually won the football game.
Right. That you were thinking it would be a moral victory Monday where yeah. you're like, all right, you know.
It felt like that Packers game where Zappe was in there and Aaron Rodgers got the ball after they punted from the 45, Bill.
Yep.
That was one of those kinds of games. It was just shocking that they came back, they won, but it was also the way in which Vrabel talked all week and all the players talked that it felt like old school Patriots football where you had a singular message from the head coach mm-hmm. saying, we're here, we're thrilled about the stage that we're going to be on, we expect to win.
So it was a great win because I think, you know, if you looked at it nationally, I don't think there were many people that were picking the Patriots to win just because of where the two franchises are in this moment. In this moment heading into the game, the Bills are considered, you know, either a Super Bowl contender or some people are picking them to win the Super Bowl. And for the Patriots, you know, depending on where you are, you got them at 8 wins, you got them at 7 wins, you get them at 9 wins, but nobody knows what they are or what they were going to be headed into that game. So to win a game like that, it is a huge, huge win because I think the expectations now for the team are to be, oh, this is a good football team. It's not like last night's game where the Giants beat Philly and you go, oh, could the Giants be for real?
No, right. That's a Thursday night. The Eagles have some inner turmoil going on.
Right.
What Sunday was for the Patriots was the first time they actually went up against a team that was the anointed one in their division yeah. on the road, and your quarterback outdueled the best quarterback in football this year. It was an awesome win. I think a lot of Pats fans are back. We see you lining up on the phone, 617-779-7937. 3 hours from now, Kostos will be all hopped up on Mountain Dew, but right now, here's Courtney with What's Trending.
Now, here's What's Trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by Jackson Lumber. The Bruins take the home opener in overtime 4-3, the final against the Blackhawks.
And it squirts to Minton. He's going to have a long two-on-one with Geeky. Minton, game on his stick, walks in, shoots.
Yeah, that's B's rookie Fraser Minton who got the game winner. Korpisalo was in goal. He had 21 saves in the win. They're off tonight before taking on the Sabres at home tomorrow. Puck drop is at 7. The Celtics have another preseason game tonight at 7 in Toronto. The Eagles fell to the Giants on Thursday Night Football. 34-17 is the final in New York. The Giants held the Super Bowl winners scoreless in the second half to get to 2-4 on the season. The Eagles are dropped on the season to 4-2.
The Eagles have like some serious issues.
Yeah.
That team is. It feels very similar to 2 years ago where they started like 10-0 and mm-hmm. then just lost every game in the second half of the season where it was just like clearly there was something bubbling underneath even though they were a good football team because there is something really wrong about that offense.
How yeah. many turnovers did they have last night, though? Like, 5?
I think it was 2. No, I think it was only 2. It was the A.J. Dillon fumble mm-hmm. and the Jalen Hurts pick, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I believe so. I think the biggest thing, Shyman, I think the thing is the inner turmoil with the team on trying to figure out what their identity is on offense. You know, do they want to get the ball to Saquon? Is he the first option? A.J. Brown's upset about that. Then
like,
you got,
when was the last time Saquon Barkley only had 12 carries right. in a football game?
And then you look at, then you got Devontae Smith. It's kind of like the offensive coordinator has all this talent, but doesn't have a clear identity of what direction he wants to go
in. Why are we targeting Dallas Goedert 11 times yeah. in a game where you have A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, and Saquon Barkley?
Right. Yeah.
And also Nick Sirianni being kind of a not exactly an alpha doesn't help in the situation.
Some really sad news. Beloved member of the Loyola University basketball program, Sister Jean, has died at the age of 106. So I wow. guess it's not that sad. Like, what an unbelievable life.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And more sad news. Former Sox All-Star Mike Greenwell has died at the age of 62, 2 months after announcing thyroid cancer diagnosis.
I'm going to do that as my lead. I love the Gator. My first favorite Boston athlete, Mike Greenwell, rest in peace.
And it's a Patriots Friday. We'll be joined by Pop Douglas this morning at 7 to talk about the Pats matchup with the Saints on Sunday at 1. And contractors, builders, and homeowners, visit Jackson Lumber and Millwork for all your residential remodeling or commercial building materials and supplies. Jackson Lumber and Millwork, providing solutions and delivering results since 1946. That's what
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Barry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Barry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Trending coming up next, we've got our leads.
What's the name of this song, Courtney?
Cheeseburger in Paradise.
Yeah,
and I know the artist as well.
Who is it?
Jimmy Buffett.
Yes.
Strong awesome. Start for Courtney this morning.
It is amazing.
Was he a billionaire when he unfortunately passed?
No, you're thinking of Warren Buffett.
No, I think Jimmy Buffett. I think Jimmy Buffett was up there when it came to net worth.
He did not own Berkshire Hathaway.
Yeah, I know that.
I don't think a billionaire.
Well.
Yeah, I think you might be thinking Warren Buffett.
Oh, shucks. 275. All right.
Yeah. A little off.
Oh, that was awesome.
It was a little off.
How much
did Jimmy Buffett so good worth? Too.
By 2023, his net worth was officially $1 billion.
Jimmy Buffett?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Warren Buffett's a guy that is brilliant investor. Yeah. Jimmy Buffett sadly passed. The Margaritaville Hotel that we stay at down the Cape, lovely.
Uh-huh.
Very nice place.
Jimmy Buffett owned that?
Yes.
That part of his portfolio?
Margaritaville is his thing.
Okay.
So that's
what I'm saying. His portfolio is more than just the music.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Courtney, I don't want to disagree with the pregnant woman. I think you're right.
And we'll believe anything that the internet says when it comes to net worth. So what's it saying, $1 billion?
Buffett released his first album, Down to Earth, in 1970, and to speak to his finances, by 2023, his net worth was officially $1 billion. This includes a $180 million stake in his company, Margaritaville Holdings, LLC, which opened in 1985 and now brings in $1 to $2 billion annually.
Look at that.
Wow, look at that.
Margaritaville.
All right, Courtney.
Thank you.
No shoes, no service, or no problem, however it goes.
I didn't know that place made
that's
that much.
That's a Kenny Chesney song.
I didn't know that place made so much bread.
I mean, before the road shows, Margaritaville was struggling. We went there, boom, took over. Speaking of Jimmy Buffett, he was played because the host of the show, Greg Hill, is in Key West, which is what Jimmy Buffett helped make famous. And he'll be back on Monday. Courtney, Wiggy, Shime, and I are here. College Tom as well. Cotto in Boston. Good morning, Cotto. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. So yesterday you guys kind of spoke on what would happen if Bill Belichick was let go by North Carolina. And you guys kind of had brought up the Giants. And to Courtney's point, I'm not a fan of the Giants. I hate New York. But I do love Jackson Dart. And yesterday watching the game, I started to think to myself that if Bill Belichick were to ever go back to the Giants, at least in these next couple of years, it would be a complete S show. And I say that because you have an alpha young quarterback like Jackson Dart, and you also have an alpha receiver like Malik Nabers who will be coming back. And I think that if Bill were to get into that position again, it would be like a Mac Jones situation all over again, and it would further ruin whatever he has left of a career after the Patriots.
Yeah, I think Courtney's going to get to Belichick and Hurley today, and very, very, very unlikely he's back in the NFL. If he does end his career with North Carolina, I think he'll be a media guy. He'll do something. Maybe he'll go to speak across the country. I have no clue. But the days of him being a head coach in the NFL, right. I think, are likely
I think
over.
Courtney said it best yesterday. Like, who's going to hire him? You know what I mean? It would be like, you know, when you look at it, it's like, who's going to run the risk of – because aren't there – you know, who the hell knows what reports – like, aren't there reports out in – Vegas that Pete Carroll and there's a whole bunch of stuff going on there and it just seems like, you know, that doesn't look like it turning out to be a good option. So maybe some of these.
Well, if there was a place, if they really wanted to do something interesting in Vegas, they could hire the other 70-year-old.
No, but I'm thinking maybe these owners might go away from hiring guys that are in their 70s,
yeah.
You know, when it comes to, you know, trying to get guys to buy in.
Yeah, it's the other thing is that the jobs that become available now are often on teams that are not winning at a high level. And if you're not winning at a high level, then you're going to begin a process of a rebuild. Do you want to begin a rebuild with a guy that just wants to win now? It's not exactly a match.
And a guy who's 73 years old.
Right. So thank you for the call, though, Cotto. 30 minutes from now, we will have Pop Douglas explain to us why this is not a trap game Sunday in New Orleans. But right now, let's get to this.
This is the Greg Hill Show. Time now for The Lead.
I should know this. I've heard it a million times.
You definitely have. Very popular in the early 2000s.
Blink 182.
Not quite. Think about trapping. Cut the beat.
I have no idea.
This is Headstrong by the band Trapped.
Oh, I never heard of Trapped, but I'm glad I knew the song, didn't know the band. 0-for-1. Shime, what is your lead today?
Yeah, I just, thank you, Curtis. I think, you know, you guys hit on it already a little bit, but the idea of trap games in the NFL right now are very, very real, just because I think the parody in the NFL, Wiggy has touched on this a little bit throughout the week, there just are no like juggernaut teams in the NFL right now. Every game is relatively, for the most part, there are some really bad football teams, but they're, for the most part, every game is winnable for any team on Sundays, which I think has made a really enjoyable product so far this year through 5 weeks. I look forward to the regular season because I think, like, you look at the NFC, the way the Eagles are stumbling, any team could win the NFC. It could be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It could be the Detroit Lions. It could be the Philadelphia Eagles. It could be the Washington Commanders. Like, you have no real sense, no front runner in the NFC. And I think it's the same with the AFC. Like, Buffalo, to me, I would still pick as the best team in the AFC. But at this point, through 5 weeks, I wouldn't be shocked if the Indianapolis Colts were to come out on top, or the Jacksonville Jaguars were to find their way on top, or somehow Kansas City rises from the dead and they won the AFC. Like, all of those things seem plausible and possible to me, and I think it makes for a really good NFL product, but I also think it makes it very scary for the New England Patriots over the next 4 weeks. We have them winning. We want them to win all four games against the Saints, Browns, Titans, and Falcons, and those are all four very winnable games, but at the same time, again, because of the parity and the way the league is right now, no game is a guarantee. They have to be fully prepared mentally and physically for each one of these games, and they have to do everything they can to come away with the win. Curtis, you mentioned earlier this week, like, it doesn't matter if they win by 10 or they win by 1, just come out with the W, and everybody, I think, will be happy when we get to that Tampa Bay Buccaneers game if you can come out with 4 wins.
Because last night, like, if you would have told us going into the season and you're looking at, all right, Thursday night football schedule, like, all right, which games do I want to watch? Last night we would have been like, who the hell wants to watch Giants-Eagles?
If you had told me the Eagles were up at halftime and would score 0 points in the second half, I would never believe you.
And just, you don't even have to look across the NFL, Shime, but you make a very, very compelling lead to my good friend Shime. The other thing I would say is the Patriots themselves have lost 2 games where they were the better team at home this season. They're a better team than the Raiders, and they were better than the Steelers. They just kept, I mean, they had 5 turnovers. So if that happens on Sunday, if they're not controlling the ball, if they're turning the ball over, if they're having dumb penalties, they're going to lose. I just think that this, it is so important, and I know Vrabel knows this, that Courtney's fears will come to fruition if they don't win. Everything that we've said this week will disappear.
Right.
And the pressure will be compounded that how do you blow 3 games now against the Raiders? I mean, the Ravens, the Raiders, the Steelers, and the Saints.
Yeah. It also, like, the confidence level. And Mike Vrabel, after the win, said, you know, we were confident going into this one when asked about confidence. But you can't deny that if you're Drake May, still a young quarterback, getting a win like that on Sunday, your confidence level must go up. But then if you go in and you lose on the road to a team you should be beating and you see the narrative switch, that's a blow to your confidence as well. Like, we should be building on that confidence right now, not taking away from it.
Right.
All right. And I failed in this, Shime, so demerit. The leads today are brought to you by Subaru. Fall in love with a brand new Subaru featuring symmetrical all-wheel drive. Find yours at SubaruofNewEngland.com. College or post-college, Tom, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Curtis. Like many, I watched the Tatum video dunking yesterday. And as somebody who was very skeptical about when Tatum was going to come back, I am all in on Tatum returning this season. And I think he can make NBA history this season. The fastest return from an Achilles tear in the NBA is from Wesley Matthews at 237 days. Tatum at 150 days is already dunking. And if you look at other players who have come back from an Achilles super, super fast, like Kobe Bryant, who tore his Achilles at 34 years old, he returned in 240 days. And just 30 days before he returned, he was doing full 5-on-5 workouts. And 2 months before that, he was doing box jumps and things like that. So if Tatum is ramping up for the next 5 weeks, then actually starts doing 5-on-5 scrimmages, basketball drills, Tatum could be back late December, early January. And if he says he wants to have his first game back, be at the Garden, early January, there were 4 home games in a row at TD Garden against the Bulls, Nuggets, Raptors, Spurs. Tatum is an anomaly, and I am so, so thankful he is on our Boston Celtics, because no other athlete would work as hard to come back from this injury as Jason Tatum is.
It's just going to be interesting.
Can I ask just a quick question? Why do we, if you're Tatum, why are you trying to get the expectations there? Like, why wouldn't you do this behind the scenes and then show everybody you're ready to go early?
It's a pretty sick video.
Yeah, I mean,
right, but it's all about him. It's not about the team. I mean, the team is, all they're going to be asked about is, when is Tatum coming back?
Yeah, and I think when you look at it,
Rusty is a mother.
And to Real World Tom's lead, I wonder, because the Kobe Bryant situation, he came back, but he only played in 6 games, right? So if you're talking about Tatum coming back, let's say January, we'll put that on it. That's a lot of games that Tatum's going to be playing, and I
it's a great lead, Tom. To me, I don't care about the record-breaking thing. I just want him to be as healthy as possible, as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that maybe this is a way to, you know, lift the spirits, but it overshadows the entirety of the start of the Celtics season. There's nothing that they're going to do in the first half of the season that will be more important than what Jason Tatum posts on Instagram.
But I think to college, Real World Tom's.
It's okay. He was just college.
Just lead, call him Tommy Cutlets now.
Right? I think to his lead is that if the Celtics can stay competitive when Tatum's out, and then let's say Tatum does come back January 1st, now they can now make a push because they'll have Tatum, and we'll say, oh, wow, Tatum looks like he's back in rare form and he's ready to go. And this Celtics team stayed competitive enough. And now you don't necessarily have to throw away next season.
Double-edged sword, though, because if they struggle for the first half of the season, mm-hmm. though, to Curtis's point, everybody's going to be begging, when is Jason Tatum coming back? And these videos only fuel that fire.
Ding, ding, ding.
But remember, it's him doing a two-foot jump dunk with 2 hands.
It was a shoe ad. It's a shoe ad.
Yeah, where there's no high intensity.
But it's still cool.
How do you think it was received by Celtics fans?
No, we were all over it.
I mean, listen to Tom. He's slobbering all over it.
And I didn't see, until Tom said that, I didn't notice it. And so I said, let me go look at the video. I was like, man, okay. Man, he banging off 2 feet like that already without even taking a step.
Yeah. How many shows did Greg miss with the puppy gate?
I wasn't around for that period.
Me either. One of the funniest scenes I would witness would be where the old EEI studios were in 20 Guest Street. Our studio doors opened into the hallway, which is right where the elevators were. And at like 5:58 every day during that period, you would hear this commotion. Spaz would run. Greg would be walking with coffee and like some crazy contraption and like a wheelchair. It was the craziest thing I had ever seen, but I'm glad I wasn't working for him then. He sounded like he would have been a little curmudgeonly. We're going to finish our leads in a minute. I just want to let you all know that we are live on Twitch, brought to you by Springer's Jewelers. For over 150 years, Springer's Jewelers has helped New England celebrate life's biggest moments. Just like that caller this morning got engaged in Key West. He should have gone to Springer's Jewelers. Located in tax-free Portsmouth, New Hampshire, Springer's carries the world's finest jewelry and watches. Visit springersjewelers.com. Courtney's lead, Wiggy's lead, and my lead coming up next. Courtney with some important information as to the reporting on Bill Belichick. We'll get to that next.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody. Greg Hill off, back Monday. He finally made it to Key West. If you missed the start of the show, his flight was delayed, then diverted, and then he took an Uber 4 hours to Key West. I'm sure he was in great spirits when he arrived at the remnants of the rehearsal dinner for Mr. Dooley. Big weekend for him. So Greg will be back, God willing, Monday. We heard two leads, and then now it's Courtney's turn. Good morning, Courtney.
Good morning, everybody. We talked a lot about Bill Belichick yesterday, and before people say, oh, more Bill Belichick bashing, this is actually a positive lead for me, because Pat Welter, who was nice enough to join us yesterday, he is a reporter for WRAL. He apparently was the guy who broke all the news when it came to Bill Belichick and UNC and the parting of ways that seemed to be imminent. He tweeted after he talked to us later yesterday, speaking to multiple sources today, reports that hashtag UNC decision makers discussed an exit strategy regarding Bill Belichick are false. Same with Belichick triggering his own buyout. Internally, they are working to improve across the board. So he is now saying that those reports that he first went with are false. I guess it's wow. Now a case of, what do you believe? Do you believe the initial reporting, or do you believe that this was actually never a thing and was just more so some rumors that were spread? I think both can be true. I always think if there's smoke, there's fire. And I believe that there are parents that are really upset with Bill Belichick and what's panned out with their children. I also believe that you don't have assistant coaches speaking out to media saying, you know, I can't believe what we're doing to these kids.
Right.
What about the what about the Ollie Connolly stuff about like recruiting violations?
I bet that's probably everywhere if you look at it, like, you know, sideline passes or maybe kids selling tickets.
Yeah.
You know, I get that,
and that's a bad look as well, but I do believe that there was no buyout being discussed.
Right.
And there was no firing that was going to happen before UNC takes on Cal in 2 weeks.
But all the stuff that you want us to believe is all this like complete issue down there and like, you know, fights in the locker room, parents complaining, kid injured who had his keys taken away. We'll see you in a year. It's like you said, coaches saying, I can't believe what the F we're doing to these kids. So you painted this picture that it's like an absolute chaos and jungle down there.
Right.
And then you come back and go, wait a second. Even though I told you I did a lot of digging to get this information, that information that I got wasn't right.
But just so everybody's on the same page, Ollie Connolly was the one that reported that Bill was going to North Carolina in the first place. And he had the tweet thread 2 days ago that has 11 million views on X, and he hasn't said anything.
Yeah, but what did Ollie Connolly say?
All that stuff is what Ollie Connolly reported, and then Pat initially said, I had this as well, and then he said, wait, I don't have it.
Was that the violation stuff or the buyout stuff?
So the first tweet in the thread from Ollie Connolly, per sources, Belichick has discussed buyout options with North Carolina's hierarchy. Belichick has signaled a willingness to trigger his own $1 million buyout if he can find a soft landing spot with another team or media. And what very well could have happened is Bill didn't find a soft landing spot and said, I was never interested in the first place.
But why would then the guy who reported it after the Ollie Connolly, the guy we had on, why would he go then say, oh, this was all a lie?
Because Ollie Connolly is an independent journalist at Substack, and this guy writes for a local newspaper, a local TV station that probably needs to be connected to North Carolina.
That's why, like when you start to hear this stuff, that's why I don't believe, you can't believe nothing, you know, that's being said.
Yeah, just a bow on what what I feel about this. There's no way that Bill Belichick is being fired, at least in the next 2 weeks. Like, you are going to see him on the sideline at Cal.
People are like, oh, he's not even going to coach against Cal. He's out at the end of the week. It's like, you can't believe anything. The part I believe and Pat was right about, are they not a good football team? Yeah. They're not a good football team statistically. That I can I agree with him from watching the play. You go, okay, they got to do better. But all this other stuff.
I believe that there was a fight in the locker room on Tuesday. Greg heard stuff about that as well, and I trust Greg's sourcing. Like, I believe that there is stuff going on behind the scenes. I just don't think that there is a parting of ways happening between the head coach.
I don't know
what
to believe.
Yeah, they would have to pay Bill $20 million. The first 3 years of his contract are fully guaranteed. Another thing that came out of this: do you know that Mike Lombardi is the highest paid GM in college football?
I could see that.
It has a very active TikTok account. Right. We had a caller yesterday who was like, you got to check out his TikTok. I followed yesterday. Very I'm a fan. Active.
Yeah, a lot of stuff
unbelievable.
Going on.
Bill, he's making like $2 million a year. Yeah. And he picked horrible players.
Yeah.
Thank you, Courtney, for correcting the record on that one. Wiggy, right. What's on your mind?
Good job, Courtney. So the one thing I'll say about this game Sunday, and it leads me down this road because I hear a lot of players talking about it. We talked about Steph Diggs. We'll talk with Pop Douglas today, but a lot of players are talking about how focused they are and the importance of this game. And what that tells me is that Mike Vrabel has these guys locked in. That's why I feel confident in this game that they're going to play Sunday against the Saints in New Orleans, that he'll have those guys ready to go. Because when you hear so many of them speak, they always talk about the importance of this game and how it could be bigger than last week. Even though we all know that last week is massive, you're playing a division opponent on the road. We know that that is a much bigger game. Vrabel's even talked about how the importance of playing a division opponent on the road is. But I love the fact that he's got them buying in and focused on this game is so important. We can't lose focus so they don't get caught in the trap game. And that's one thing that I'll give Mike Vrabel a lot of credit for, because it might just be lip service, but at least these guys are regurgitating what that message is. And that shows me that they're at least going to go into this game laser focused, locked in, and understanding the importance of playing a team that's not as good as you, that you should be able to beat, even if it is on the road. So that I feel good about. And when they do win, I'll feel even good about it the following week, because I know Mike will put that same type of sentiment into their minds headed into Tennessee.
Yeah, I feel like, Wiggy, great points. Mike Vrabel is why I am not fearful of the team not showing up Sunday. Right. I feel like he has got that. What that win last week did was whoever was sort of doubting, whatever guy was sort of not fully in on the buy-in of what Vrabel's message was, you have to be in now. Just like the fan base, I feel like, is in now. And we'll get to the fans' reaction to that week as they approach this weekend later. Pop Douglas in about 5 minutes. Just wanted to say quickly, condolences to the family of Mike Greenwell, who passed away at the young age of 62 to thyroid cancer. Cancer absolutely sucks. Mike Greenwell played his entire career for the Boston Red Sox. He was my first favorite Boston athlete. I loved the way he played. I loved his batting stance. I loved how smooth he was in left field. Left field at Fenway Park, left field for the Red Sox has been such an iconic position through the years, whether it's Manny, Yaz, Greenwell, you know, Carl Everett. But in all sincerity, what Mike was a guy that embodied the dirt dog well before Trot Nixon was in right field. And those teams were really not that good. Obviously, they made it to the ALCS a couple of times, got swept by the A's, but the early 90s, Mike Greenwell led me to my true favorite, Mo Vaughn. But the Gator was someone who had his own theme park in Florida. He was this guy that just was not at all Boston, who became what Boston loved. And it's really, really sad that he was gone at that age. But wanted to just say that those 90s Red Sox teams were mediocre at best. And you had,
but they had characters.
But
though.
They had characters. So you had, you know, you had Clemens, you had the Rocket and the Gator, and he will be sorely missed, and condolences to his family. So a life well lived, cut way too short by cancer. We are going to get to Pop Douglas in 5 minutes, and in an hour, or in 45 minutes, we're going to get to the news in court with Courtney.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.